Everybody's kind of back on time early, so a little auxiliary practice. When I'm really into obsessing, I don't know if you ever obsess, but if I'm really into an obsessive thought pattern, if you told me to get into my body, I don't have a body right then. The thoughts are so overwhelming that I can't break that cycle. And there's a wonderful little practice called No Thought Is Worth Thinking About. And what you do is you introduce it on the level of thought. So you're going around and around, I can't believe this, blah, blah, blah. No thought is worth thinking about. It helps me if I use my name. Mary, no thought is worth thinking about. But, blah, 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 blah. Mary, no thought is worth thinking about. Mary, no thought is worth thinking. And it might take a while. It's wonderful walking the dog or being out or doing something. What it does is it begins to break the obsessive cycle. Just enough that as grace kind of rushes in, it's usually then very easy to focus on the body because your neck is killing you or you have a massive headache or, you know, the body has a lot to say. But no thought is worth thinking about is a wonderful practice for that repetitive cycle that many of us have. Often it's a story we've told ourselves over and over again. There they go again. They always do that. Blah, 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 blah. That's just very hard to interrupt. So you don't interrupt it. You just introduce this into it and say it out loud if you can. Nobody's around. But it really saves lives. Remember Delta? It stands for change. Okay, the fruits of welcoming. I went to an introductory Zen workshop years ago, and they did the fruits of Zen, the ABCs of Zen, and I loved this. The ABCs of Zen were a bigger container. Meaning, you don't grow, but there's more space interiorly. You're a bigger container, like for grace. Well, the ABCs of welcoming, for me, are a change in our attitude, behavior, which is really becomes a change in our consciousness. Remember what we started with? Consciousness. Now, many of you may know that beloved serenity prayer. God grant me this serenity. The courage. And the wisdom. See, I used to get mad at the serenity prayer when people would say that. Either let go and let God, or God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Because I was always like, how? How? What I found is welcoming is a path to that how. If I am willing to stay in my experience and to feel my feelings as they manifest in my body, it becomes very apparent when you are to act, when you're not to act. It's not a question of figuring it out. It's miraculous. What leaves your it's not yours to do. It resolves on its own. You know, that's the biggest thing in the world. Did you know stuff happens without you doing anything? That really, it's always like, really? So sometimes it's the pause. But this begins to manifest. And the attitude of serenity or acceptance, true acceptance for me is serenity, is it that's where it starts. I have to accept and allow that it is happening. It is real, and this is my reaction to it. What I'm feeling is happening. If that's where I start, grace can free flow out of that. If you need to do something, you will. And what I have found is the people to do or that you have to speak to, they'll be provided. You know, I used to think we had to make it happen, but it doesn't. All of a sudden, they'll be right there in your path. Or they'll call, or there's an occasion that everybody just, it manifests. But generally, for me, it's when I've let go of needing to do something with it and I've done this. Okay, what do I do now? Really? You know? And it's there. A lot of it is coming just to the attitude to accept that it really is. It does hurt. Or we are aging, or this is happening, that's happening, okay. And the wisdom to know the difference is given. It's not that something I have to do. It's like breathe and trust that God will reveal more to you and to me. As we have the capacity to understand and see it. It's tremendously powerful what happens in this prayer practice. Even though it may not be noticeable in the ordinary course of events. Do you know in the beginning of Open Mind, Open Heart, it's one of the most beautiful passages Thomas has, that contemplative prayer is the world in which God can do anything. Let me read it to you. This is what welcoming is totally at the service of in centering prayer. Contemplative prayer is the world in which God can do anything. To move into that realm is the greatest adventure. It is to be open to the infinite and hence infinite possibilities. Our private self-made worlds come to an end. A new world appears within and around us, and the impossible becomes an everyday experience. Yet, the world that prayer reveals is barely noticeable in the ordinary course of events. You might find yourself with that person that's driving you crazy, and you're nice. Or you don't react in your normal way. No one else in the room may even be aware of it. But all of a sudden you are, wow, they didn't get to me. And you know it isn't you. The gift when we really surrender to these practices is we realize we're not doing it. But God is doing in us what we could not do. And what we finally surrendered to is that we couldn't do it. It's like we walk along and God's saying, do you want any help? No, thanks. Sure, nope, I got it. Nope. And you know, you fall down and make a mess of it. Are you sure you don't want help? No, I don't think so yet. So we sit there a while longer, and finally, are you sure? Okay, well, maybe you can take this. And that's what Thomas is talking about, which isn't light spiritual teaching, as I make a mess, but just a few of the lines. Powerlessness is our greatest treasure. And this is what's important. To be in too big a hurry to get over our difficulties is a mistake because, sounds like Teilhard, you do not know how valuable they are from God's perspective. For without them, you may never be transformed as deeply and as thoroughly. your greatest wound ends up to be your greatest treasure, because nothing can so heal. It keeps going on. The title of this one, God is already here. You know that line, you're already, there's nowhere to go, you're already there. Yeah. I used to keep over my bed one of those little New Yorker cartoons, and it was just the pen and ink, or the ink and paper, of two Buddhist monks, a young one and an old one. The young one was sitting there on the zafu with the little sandals, and he had a very quizzical look on his face. And the old one was filled with consternation. And the caption was, "Nothing happens next, this is it." Because sometimes we come into these prayer practices like, okay, I'm going to get better. And the first couple weeks we kind of feel better and nicer. But if you go with it for a while, your psychological experience of yourself is actually that you might be that you're getting worse. You're not, but what's changing is, you know how Father Thomas talks about? The lights are being turned out, and now God says, oh, you're ready to see yourself a little more clearly. So it's never to discourage us, because the fruits of it are humility and hopefully a lot of humor, but you begin to see. So the psychologically, you may feel, this isn't for me, because I didn't ever see myself as jealous or angry, or I'm not like that. Well, not all the time, maybe, but maybe that's just a piece you're being asked to look at. And again, not to be belittled, but to just bring you closer and to give it with a little more gentleness to this God that's just attempting to love us into life. So we breathe into and feel what we're feeling in our bodies. Welcome, and we let go. My shorthand for welcoming is yes. After a while, it becomes less and less words. The words are important in the beginning to really set the intention and do the movement. So you practice them. We hand out the brochure so you have the words in there. Because tomorrow morning, you're going to wake up and the false self, remember, Merton put it this way, be careful of making friends of the spirit. The spirit's going to ask you to die. This we use nice words like transformation. Do you want transformation? Sure. Even on the tough side, you want purification? Well, not really, but okay. Well, it's death. Paul talked about it, the old man dies. It's the Christ that lives in me. The experience is that everything you know of yourself is asked to die. That's what this dismantling of the false self is like. It's like, how could that be? I don't know. Merton uses the image that we're born and we get kind of messed up and we turn inside out, and that the whole journey is to bring us back into right side in. But the psychological experience of centering prayer and the deeply following this contemplative path is very big and is very transformative and purifying. But I don't take it lightly if you really say yes to this, because what you're surrendering is who you think you are. And it's walking in faith that God is really there, even though everything in you says this doesn't feel good, it can't be holy, and I must have really made a wrong turn somewhere along the way. Thomas describes it, it's like the little boy and the house is on fire. And he's there and he's yelling for his father, and his father keeps saying, "Joey, jump, Joey, jump." And the little kid keeps yelling, "But I can't see you." And the father yells up, "I know, but I can see you." So for our experience is Joey in the flames, the house is burning, and you can't see. And it's trusting that there is the loving arms waiting to hold us as we let go. Or they do the analogy of the ship and, you know, to cross over to the other side. The other passage I use, sometimes it's Mary and Martha. The other one I use is the calming of the storm. But they got in the boat to cross to the other side. If you want to go to the other side, you have to be willing to let go of this shore, which is who we think we are, who we think God is, how we think it should be, in love, and see what God does with it. All of these practices are only allowing a bigger space for God. And that's what the people around you that you love and in your life, they begin to receive more of that. So it's an incredible journey. But back to dear Thomas, it is not a success. This spiritual journey is not a career, but a succession of diminutions of self. Which is the great freedom. Like, have you seen The Rising Tide of Silence? If you haven't, I strongly recommend it. It's Thomas's life story. It's the biography that... And at the end, he's standing there, and he says, wow, I would do it all again. I don't know how you feel, but that's not how I feel most days. I'm so impressed with at the end. Do you hear? He's got that quality of like, yeah, wow. Wow. Wouldn't that want to be how we get? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we got more and more like, this is wow, instead of, oh, okay. Okay. So, this little welcoming prayer practice with the little shorthand of no thought is worth thinking about really support. So if you pick a relationship or something in your daily life that you would like to really be with, again, you're not focusing on the other person or the situation, but every time you think of them, you're focusing on what it brings up in you. If you have family coming to visit, welcome before they get there. If you're going to visit, spend time with yourself prior to that. If there is a certain situation, somebody mentioned that they did it in their car on their visor. Driving is a wonderful, especially in Miami. Welcoming is really helpful. Forgiveness practice too. But the more you practice with little things, the more natural it becomes, so that you'll see that maybe you don't need so many big things, God doesn't, to get your attention, because you're paying attention a lot more. And what I found is the miracle of welcoming is sometimes in the most casual ways possible. It's like, wow. Wow. And the ones that really respond to this are children and animals, because your energy shifts and they seem to be much more in line with your with our energies. You know, as adults, we kind of fake it. But kids and animals, they know. So questions or comments on the welcoming prayer practice?
We know that in centering, we center for 20 to 30 minutes twice a day. What is our time on the welcoming prayer? Did I hear you say that you welcome every morning before centering?
What I suggest is the more you can build it in for routine practice. So some of the ways I do it is, especially if I'm using an alarm, I have thoughts and feelings because I wake up jarred. So to start the day with welcoming, it's a wonderful, it's how I do my exam of consciousness at the end of the night. Instead of exam of conscience, I look at it as exam of consciousness. What are you carrying with you at the end of your day? You know how your body often talks at night? Like, wow, that hurts. So to just spend a little time. If you do some breaks in your day, like if you know what your day is, I didn't need it in the morning for my centering prayer because most of the time mornings are very peaceful. The afternoon sit, I would also often use welcoming as a vestibule into it for myself. Do you know what I mean? Like just to transition back home into the chair. Driving, so those body scans, but it's whatever, and then on particular relationships. It's just phenomenally helpful in changing the energy from which we begin to come out. So one of my great gifts in my life is my mother is 97 years old, and I call her every morning. And she, her one great line to me, she has a lot of them, but her one great line is, "Your aunt thinks you're a saint, but I know you're a mixed bag." And I can tell by the tone of her voice in the morning, you know, "Good morning, hi, I'm happy to hear from you," or "Hi, you're not a good daughter, why are you leaving me, blah, blah, blah." So it's very helpful for me in this space prior to calling to check in with myself so that I'm not adding what she probably gets, because I am a mixed bag, what she probably gets. So those little things that are routine in our day, all I know is the more you practice it, the more it's there for you. And the more it's there for you, the more you're aware of how much you need to practice, because stuff comes up. So if you can make a little game.
You know, what you're saying is, it's been such a comfort, right,
Mary, because one thing we're never professional at is Christians. And you've just modeled that amateur, and that's it's such a freeing thing, because all of us here are here for a reason, but none of it is to get perfect. It's all just to get the process. Keeping the process. And the other thing, I keep getting hit with this illustration. We're big movie people as a family. We love movies. And at Christmas time, we watch certain movies. And one of our favorites is A Christmas Carol with Alistair Sim. And it just hit me, this analogy, because he wasn't looking for forgiveness. He was this crotchety old miserable man who was on his way to hell. And then God intervened through those three spirits. And it wasn't until he saw himself dead in the end with that third spirit where he got it. Is this how I want to end my life? And one of my favorite parts is when he comes to his senses in the morning and he realizes that God has given him another chance at life. And he starts dancing, hilarious, and he starts screaming, "I don't know anything. I don't know anything." And it's a wonderful, freeing thing. And then the woman runs out because she thinks he's nuts. But for him, it's the beginning of his life. And it's just so cool to think that God, we're all here at this moment for that. It's the beginning of the better part of our lives. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Who's next? I heard somewhere that welcoming prayer was very helpful to Mary Mazowski when she was dying.
I read that, I'm sure, maybe in one of those contemplative bulletins.
Well, the story, I'll tell you her story, a little bit of it. She went to Italy with her son-in-law, was a psychiatrist, and her daughter, there was a psychiatric conference. And so she was over in Assisi. And if you knew Mary, that would just be like Mecca. And so she was out wandering the streets by herself, and Mary was a diabetic, had type 2 diabetes, and had done a lot, and was off insulin at the time. Maybe she was back on, but had really worked with her physicality a lot. But a car went by one of the streets. Long story short, she fell and broke her arm. And she was in Italy, and she was out. So they took her to the hospital, and she somehow communicated with them, not speaking the language, and they set her arm. And by the time she got back to the conference, but without any pain relief, she didn't take an aspirin or anything. And she said, "I'm not telling you not to take an aspirin if you need to, but what about turning to God?" So they managed to set the arm, and she went back to the conference and was telling the doctors, blah, blah, blah. So all of that happened. Well, later on, she got back to Chrysalis and she was going out to Denver soon after, like right after, to give this workshop and a forgiveness prayer. And she did this prayer, and later on she was meeting with Sister Bernadette Teasdale in the chair, and she just went. You can hear her. I had the tape of her last welcoming presentation that night, and she said, "I have a pain in my chest," or something, that she was welcoming and let go, and next day she dropped. So anyway, so Thomas always said she got far too good at welcoming. But she shares in that talk that her experience was absolutely mystical. That, you know, she'd been doing welcoming for a couple decades, so she wouldn't trade it for anything. But that she was able to manage the crisis, was able to communicate with the physicians, was able to get herself understood or what needed to, and to be taken care of in situations that would have caused her in the past a lot of anxiety, fear, and all of that. She said it was positively mystical. And it was just the entrance into freedom. And Thomas said at her funeral, he said, "I should have known she was going. She just got far too happy to be in the human body." And he said, he did. He lamented. He said, I should have, it should have rung a bell. Mary was 2 years younger than Thomas. So he said, "I just always thought she would outlive me. But she was so filled with life." And that's what happens. Wouldn't it be a nice thought that we just get so full of life that we just need to shed the body like the little butterfly, the pupa, instead of you get old and you shrivel up and you die, do you know? And because Mary used to, I'll tell you, she was a real stickler on our words. That a lot of us talk about you get old, sick, and die. She said, maybe you'll get old if you live long, you know, you will if you don't die sooner, and you're going to die. She goes, why do you keep inserting sickness in there? And honest to God, she just went and dropped. So it was a very big piece of her story in the welcoming piece of it. And what I'm reminded of with back there is one of my great I forgot. Who said it? Beanie, I'm looking at you. I've had a great many difficulties in... No. I've had a great many difficulties in my life. No. He wrote...
Keep going, we'll figure it out.
I had a great many difficulties in my life, and most of them have never happened. Wait. Mark Twain, thank you. But I love that. Isn't it the truth that that is the gift of aging, that we waste all this energy so when the real occasion, when we need the energy, it's not there. That's why I tie welcoming so much to your energetic flow. Because when you stop, we stop projecting or ruminating on the past, the energy comes into the present. And we have enough till we don't need it anymore. And then you let it go. So it's that whole energetic thrust that's just really, when life becomes the incredible journey of not knowing. Like when, that's what I said to my mother, because it's a fascinating thought to me. My mother and I are 40 years apart. And she said to me when she was 80 and I was 40, she said, "How did I live 40 years with you not telling me what to do?" Because literally I kind of ran the house, if you know. And I looked at her, but this is honest to God truth. I looked at her and I said, "I don't know. That's such an amazing thing to me." It really, because it was. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. Anybody else relate to Cinderella? Are there any other Cinderellas in the room? Because if you did everything, do you know? It used to amaze me that she did have a house and kids and a husband and all of that. And my grandmother did a lot. But I was like, yeah, who did that? So that made me take it back a few steps more. And I thought, at what age are we or was I, when I stopped being the learning, like, show me more, and started to say, no, do it this way. Do you know that? It was young. It was very young in my thing, because I know how to set a table. I learned all those little things, you know, because then I had to do them, or I did them, or wanted to. So, and then at some point, it took over, and it infiltrated all of my life. Like, I would love to be one of those students that was in class that was there to learn. You know that? When you just didn't... No, I needed to figure out how you got the grade, and then I learned the... It was strategic. It was strategic. So I love those who can have that space, which is where I want to be. It's part of the intention. And that's what these prayer practices do for me, is to say, I don't know. Well, what do you know about it? Or teach me, or show me. Or, wow, God, isn't that neat? There's so much to learn in an open sense, but that many of us, at least I, close down real early. So then it's trying to push that agenda through the whole way, and it gets really heavy really fast. And if not, as the Pennsylvania Dutch say, you get too soon old and too late smart. So any other questions or comments on your practice?
Would you mind going over just briefly, no thought is worth thinking about. Something is not gelling in my thinking about that thought.
Okay. Thank you, that's a good one. There were two guys, Jim and Pete. And Pete bought a new lawnmower. It's a really nice lawnmower, too. Had all the bells and whistles. So Pete said to, was it John? Sorry. Jim. Said to Jim, you can borrow the lawnmower whenever you want to. It's beautiful. Wait till you see it. And it's self-propelled. And Jim said, okay. Anyway, he thought, I'll never touch it. So Jim's out mowing his lawn, and doesn't he hit a rock and blow out the blade? And the wife's having a party that night, so the lawn has to be cut. He said, well, gee, Pete said I could borrow his lawnmower whenever I want to. So I'm just going to go over and borrow his lawnmower. I'll have the lawn done in no time at all. So Pete's walking over there, or Jim's walking over to Pete's, and he said, I bet Pete spent a lot of money on that machine. You know, that's a John Deere or a Toro or whatever. It's super powered. I bet he spent $5,000 on it. It's probably worth almost as much as a car. And if I hit another rock with his machine, he would probably make me pay for it. And I can't afford to buy a new lawnmower at $5,000. Where does he think I'm going to get that kind of money? So he rings on the doorbell, and Pete opens the door, and Jim says, you know what you can do with your lawnmower? That's where no thought is worth thinking about comes into it. Because the two events happened, but the story we tell ourselves, do you ever have that?
Yeah.
Like somebody, you're there, and you're telling this story. They have no idea what you're talking about because you've been thinking this whole thing. And you come back here, and you think we're on the same page, and they look at you like, what are you talking about? Because the thoughts get in there. Now, in Centering Prayer, we talk about commentaries, which are not just a single thought, but those are the stories and the linked thoughts that we'll hear a lot of commentaries during the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is filled with commentators. So they don't just tell you about who's catching the ball or throwing the ball. They tell you all the statistics that ever were about them throwing a ball or catching a ball and who everybody else has done and what it'll be. You know, they go on and on. Well, some of us have our built-in commentators that get us into a lot of trouble. So when the story is up, and really the obsessive story, there are a few that we have usually that are our kind of root story. Oh, there it happened again. It just proved what I've always said, that never, it's going to be like that. You know that one? You just, as soon as you hit it, it's like, I know this place, I've lived this place, I've smelled this place, I know this place. This place stinks, and I'm always going to be here forever. I can't get to my body in those places because I'm so wrapped up in thought that I use that little phrase, no thought is worth thinking about, because I'm interjecting a thought to allow some spacing between the repetitive. In a really obsessive mode, this is kind of what's happening. So if you think of just gears, you have to do something in there to alter it and to slow it down or break it. So we don't want to break it. I mean, I wish I could, but that's not how my process works. My process goes with it. So no thought is worth thinking about begins slowly, but that's why I sing it, I say it out loud, I talk to myself because I use all my senses to kind of start to come in. It allows, okay. Because when you're really upset, you know that person you could call and you could talk like this and they'd know exactly what you were talking about? Or when you're like that, what do you try to do? It's okay. Slow down. That's what no thought is worth thinking about. It's just kind of doing this. But it's doing it through that level of thought so that eventually it can dissipate and you can get to what might be going on, which usually has nothing to do with what you were thinking about. Okay? So it's a real good one.
A question, Mary. I've had that happen where I've become obsessed. Usually it's with a visual, something visual. Though it could be something else during my centering prayer practice. Would that be advisable to interject, to try to break that pattern of thought that I can't turn off?
In centering prayer, we're doing the same consent or movement in truth. So welcoming is a separate practice for the most part. But by ever so gently returning, and mind you, what Father Thomas says in Open Mind, Open Heart, at times when the unloading is really intense in centering prayer, that is your sacred word because you couldn't find your sacred word if you went to look for it. So sometimes we just sit that through. So instead of interjecting, I just sometimes we just let it be there like, here I am.
Thank you. To practice the welcoming prayer, so we focus on our body, whether it's an emotion or a feeling or the feeling that we have with our body. And then you go on to welcome that, but then the practice says letting go. Do we have to actually say these verses that you have there to learn them or to have this brochure with us until we're comfortable that we can just do it automatically?
I do advise that we say the body just because any emotion, what does it feel like? It's in the body. Do you know, we're feeling it through that. So that's what we're, and the same with really any thought. So I have had people that really do not connect at all with their bodies, and they do name feelings or have a sense of that. You start wherever you are, and you really become one with it. You feel into that experience. Interiorly, you say welcome, and interiorly, you say those two sentences, because what you're doing is you're beginning to erase the tapes that are running anyway. Do you know we all have that voice or those stories I was talking about? This is the new tape that you're kind of beginning to put in there. What I found through years of practice is it gradually becomes a wordless experience more and more. But I sometimes go back to the full words. But in the process, the words are very important. And it's good to look at the brochure because what I found is when I went back, like I learned the practice and then I went back, I found that what I had started to say was, I welcome. I welcome. And then all of a sudden I was with, who's I? Yeah. Do you see how the false self kind of inserted itself? Like, okay. So those words are not by accident. They're very simple and they're pretty straightforward. So I suggest keeping it maybe by your prayer chair or somewhere you can refer to it. What I did as a reminder, as you've heard, the prayer used to be called Open Mind, Open Heart. So OMOH was my little tagline for welcoming. I put little stickies around. On my work phone, there was a little sticky. On my bathroom mirror, there was a little sticky. On the refrigerator, there was a little sticky. Those were just little things, and I had to move them because, you know, you'll ignore them after a time. But they just were little reminders to practice, and then every once in a while, it's really helpful to look at the words because, believe me, your false self will come up with a million ways. I get that all the time. Well, I like these words better. And that's fine, but welcome is so important because it's generally pretty innocuous to our unconscious. This isn't a death blow. It's a welcoming. And remember I said Friday night, what Mary described this process with was really dancing with your demons. Come here, you little cutie. Let me dance with you. Which is how the shadow comes into the light. Do you come out when you're told, get out here? Or how about, come here, you little cutie. You know that? See, it's a welcoming. It's a welcoming even of what's coming up in us, even if our head's screaming that this is the death of me. Rejoice. You're going to be free. So, yes.
I was just wondering if you were going to talk about the difference between pain and suffering.
Thank you. This is a big point that that Mary had that's a little different than you'll hear Thomas Keating talk about it, but I'm really in Mary's court on this one. And this is what welcoming said. Pain is reality. And pain is often a beauty enhancer. Suffering is optional. Suffering is when I have a reaction to the pain. And this is how it was. I was having some surgery. So how I prepared my body to cooperate, it was some colon surgery. How I prepared my body to cooperate with it was I was just giving the little message to my body that it was okay, they were going to remove part of the colon. So I was telling it could come out, it could be flexible, relaxed, I don't know. I do my little stuffy. So I was doing my stuff with that. When the doc, my doc later, who was a surgeon, now they give you a spinal tap, or I don't know what it is, epidural or whatever. So anyway, you're out. I was out for hours. What I was fascinated with was what he told me. He said, I've never seen somebody so relaxed on the table. I thought, why wouldn't somebody be totally relaxed on the table? You are knocked out. Do you know what I mean? It's like you could, who cares how you are on the table because you're knocked out. But I realized it's the difference. It's the message we're giving our body. So if you ever have lived with real chronic pain, you know that when you resist the pain, what do? It's worse. So the pain might be there. But our relationship with the pain changes so that the pain can be the pain. And that's what Mary was trying to communicate with her arm. The pain was excruciating, but when she fully went into the pain, she found it very transformative and was able to communicate and live through a situation instead of, oh my gosh, I'm in, you know what we generally, oh. And the more you tighten, the more exacerbated. So there is real pain. But the suffering around the pain is what welcoming is at the service of changing the relationship with. And that's real. Gus, if you see Gus around in the area, ask him sometime, because he was talking about that he's had a real experience of that, that anybody who's been through that process, you begin to understand the pain might be there, but I don't have to suffer. Other people are wedded to suffering, and don't you dare touch their suffering. You know those? And they suffer so good. Yeah. Ain't it awful? And they get very aggressive if you ever suggest that. So it's never denying the pain of some of it. But it does transform our relationship with the pain and with, therefore, the suffering piece. I don't choose to suffer any more than the painfulness of life, which is pretty tough on its own. And there was a question back. Same. Okay. So let's just take a moment to come in. Just allow yourself to become fully present to yourself. Is any part of your body talking? Just allow your inner eye, like a laser, to just do a body scan. Whenever you're aware of any sensation that attracts your attention, allow your full being to become one with it. Feel into it. Welcome. Welcome. I let go of the desire for security, affection, control. Welcome. If the sensation moves, move right along with it. I let go of the desire to change what I'm experiencing. Welcome. And stay in your practice as long as you'd like in silence. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes and come back to the front. There's a little line in hidden in open mind, open heart, that's at the heart of all of these practices. To consent to God's presence is God's presence. To consent to God's presence is God's presence. What we've just been doing is consenting to God's presence in the midst of our physical reality. Yeah?